Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, 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 welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to your latest edition of the Woke Bros. I'm your host, Big Waz. My man Michael Brooks is on vacation this week, and quite frankly, I was a little bit too lazy to find a guest host, so I'm doing this by myself. Shouts to Mike Brooks. I want to thank Bhaskar for coming on last week, man. Bhaskar Sunkara of Jacobin Mag. He was fantastic. The feedback was incredible, man. People enjoyed the free-flowing nature of the conversation. We went from basketball to Bernie to getting punched in your face. We took it all over the place. We ran the gamut. So I want to thank everybody who reached out and appreciated the episode. And, of course, Bhaskar for coming on. Of course, as always, the semi-evil producer, Roboto Rob Lopez, is here on the ones and twos. He's in the building. What up, Rob?
What's going on? How are we doing?
I'm good, man. It's a two-hander this week, so you know, just be ready. Of course, you know, we're only about a week out, a little bit more than a week, 8 days from the live show in Boston at the Middle East in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Myself, Zach Harper, Black Trey, Amin, Mariano, Tom Haberstro, Ethan Sherwood Strauss. We got Pablo Torre pulling up, man. We got Henry Abbott pulling up. We're going to have a few other special guests pulling up, man. Everybody's going to be in Boston around that town. Still got a very minimal amount of tickets left, so get on that, man. All my Northeast people, if you're able to make it up to Boston, you should. You will not regret it. Be on the lookout for that, of course. And we have the LA live show of the TMBS show. Right now, of course, we got Anna Kasparian, Nando Vila as special guests, and of course, myself. I'm going to be in the building in all my splendor, acting crazy, being a dirty commie, being a treason. Nah, not treason. I guess they don't accuse commies of being treason. Treason is bastards anymore. We're just, you know, we're just second-class citizens now.
Just bastards, not treason.
Right? It's crazy how these things change. But yeah, man, be on the lot. Make sure you guys get your tickets for the LA live show of the TMBS show. Now, you know, today's a mailbag edition of the Woke Bros, which, you know, it was basically me and Rob decided we didn't want to produce the show today. So we let y'all produce it for us. Rob, let me get that first question, man.
You know, let's start it off with the easy topic here, since it is National Rihanna Day. Just a question for Waz, the biggest Rihanna stan in the world. Can you power rank maybe your top 3-4 Rihanna albums, since we ain't ever getting one?
I mean, honestly, the only Rihanna albums that I've listened to with any real regularity were the last two. Right? Where Anton, I think, Talk That Talk. Was that the one before that?
I think so. Let me see her discography.
So the last two albums were the first Rihanna albums that I've, like, played in any meaningful way. Like, before that, I was just like everybody else. And because she would put out 5-6 singles per album cycle, and they'd all be hits, and they'd all do numbers, and you'd hear them all the time. That was basically my version of listening to Rihanna albums before the last two. You know what I'm saying? And so
her actually last two are Anti and Unapologetic.
Unapologetic, yeah.
Which, by the way, that's some distance between those two. 2012 and 2016. We're almost 4 years.
And now we're 2019. But if you remember when she first came out, she was putting them out every single year. Right. So she's kind of earned the right to wait a little bit in between albums and all of that. So, yeah, man. Obviously, Anti is a classic. It's a modern day classic. Every time I spend any extended amount of time not listening to the album, every time I put it back on, I'm reminded, like, wow, this album is so freaking fire. And it runs the gamut from stuff like, you know, Work with Drake or the Wu record with Travis to Love on the Brain. Like, it goes from ballads to bangers to, you know, stuff like James Joint, which is like not a ballad, not a banger, but just straight smooth it out vibey type of stuff. Like, that album is so complete, so well-rounded. It's, you know, it's Rihanna fully realized as an artist and, you know, in the capital A artist too. So obviously, I'm still bumping that. I'm still mesmerized by the album. I'm still mesmerized by Rihanna as a public figure, right? Like, she's beyond just a singer or just a model or just a pitch person. Like, she's a symbol at this point for feminine power, femininity, just in general, just being a strong presence as a woman, man. So I'm proud of who she's become. It's quite inspiring to watch her journey from the Ponder Replay woman to, you know, this mega force in culture. It's incredible.
That question, by the way, came from Z at Z Fiki D. Thanks, Z, for the question. Next one up, I mean, I can't really pinpoint on any one person for this one, but Bernie. I mean, he announced his presidential or his intentions to run for the presidency in 2020. Multiple questions on the perfect ticket. If 45 is actually going to rerun, what other Dems do you think could put up a challenge against Bernie? So this one's kind of you, kind of ISO, take space. And what do you think about, you know, everything Bernie in 2020?
I mean, okay, so perfect ticket, which is easy for me. It's so easy. It's like, it's either if you're going to the perfect ticket would be either him and Elizabeth Warren or him and Sherrod Brown. And Sherrod Brown is somebody who's like the Senate races in Ohio, man, those margins keep getting smaller and smaller as Ohio becomes more red and more red. So Sherrod Brown, like being a vice president and actually, you know, maybe carving, maybe him and Bernie working together to carve out something where he would actually be influential in the administration. I think that would be an incredible ticket. And some people would be like, oh, two white guys in the new rainbow coalition of the Democratic Party. I mean, the bottom line is if Bernie wins our nomination, it's going to be because of his ideas straight up and down. You know, it's going to be because his ideas around work, his ideas around taxes, his ideas around healthcare, his ideas around like labor, which are issues that are right up Sherrod Brown's alley. So, you know, I feel like Sherrod Brown would be an incredible person on the ticket. But obviously, Warren.
The thing, sorry to cut you off about Sherrod Brown, is that he doesn't care about this Medicare stuff. He doesn't. He's not here for it, for Bernie's Medicare stuff.
Sure, but that doesn't mean he can't be turned around on
Right. Or that they can't find a middle ground on something.
Right. Like that he can't, that he wouldn't fall in line, specifically if he's offered actual power. Right. Not to say that, that he's going to be made some Dick Cheney type of figure, but I think Sherrod Brown, just because of his background in labor and his straight up and down, white working class people believe in who this guy is and what he stands for. And, you know, he's a great bone to throw out there to those people because he's authentically that and he is authentically progressive, right? It's not Joe Biden, you know what I'm saying? Who people will tell you like, oh, white working class people identify with him. But like at the end of the day, Joe Biden's a, you know, he's a capitalist, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like he just is. I get that he's white and he's old and he's plain spoken and he has charisma, but he's not. He's not actually somebody of the white working class anymore. I'm sure he used to be that in Scranton, but like at this point, man, when it comes to the banks and all of that stuff and Wall Street, like he is so not that. So I think Sherrod Brown is actually an authentic manifestation of everybody's desire to kowtow to white working class people. Obviously, Warren, that would be my, like me personally, of the, you know, of the people who are in the field right now, Warren would be my personal favorite pick to head up the ticket. I just think, you know, her and Bernie, like they complement each other fairly well. And they're in lockstep with a lot of this stuff, man. They were the first people talking about the fight for 15, healthcare, income inequality, the fight being fixed and rigged. Like they are in lockstep with a lot of that message. So I think that would be an incredible ticket. Somebody else who I think would be incredible with Bernie is Beto, because I think because he's so new, I think his message can be form-fitted for whatever the ticket wants it to be. And of course, he's got that money base in Texas. He's got young people enthusiastic about him. I just think he would be incredible on the stump, man. I just think that would be an incredible mixture. And he does have that it. He just does. And by the way, a lot of people don't like to say this, but Bernie does too. Like the reason why there's a cult-like there's just a cult-like aura about him and around his followers because people love him. People do realize that he has charisma. People do realize that he's about the right shit. So, you know, I think that ticket would be incredible. Now, as far as the announcement and all of those things, and I'm not ashamed to tell people all the time, you know, Charles Pierce is one of my favorite people in all of media, whether it be written, whether it be TV, whether it be podcast, however you want to phrase it. I thought he had something interesting to say about Bernie's run in the sense that, like, Bernie no longer owns these issues, right? Meaning they're not his anymore. The fight for 15, Medicare for all, free college, public college tuition. Like, these things have become so mainstream within the party. It's like, it's straight up a litmus test, right? So I don't know that Bernie could run on, like, just straight up, these are my issues and I own them and nobody else can have them. The party writ large has embraced these issues, which to me, that's what's going to be his legacy, bro. Like, when he dies, you know, it's going to be like, man, Bernie Sanders fought to make the other major party in America a party that cares about working people again. and working people expressly, right? In a way that isn't just you throw head fakes towards these issues and then we act like, you know, welfare reform is something that affects working people while also being in bed with Wall Street people, right? The Dems no longer have the ability to toe that Wall Street line and the working people line. Like, they've been forced to make a choice. And that's, yo, it's Bernie. It's because of Bernie. That being said, you know, to me, it's going to be hard for him to come out there and act like because other people within the party have adopted it, they don't have a right to run on it. Right. I think that's going to be a problem for him. And I just thought it was interesting that Chuck Pierce brought that up. I just think that's it's going to be a hell of a fight to get this nomination because the field is so wide. It's, you know, they said in 2015, they said that the Dems had sort of cleared the field for Hillary Rodham Clinton. And in a lot of ways, that was true. And Bernie threw a monkey wrench in all of that. Well, in 2019, we had the opposite of that. This is a wide open race. You know, there are no quote unquote party favorites and this, that, and the third and whatever. I just think it's going to be interesting. To my mind, he's the front runner. He's got the most name recognition. He's got a lot of money behind him. He's got the freaking issues that are energizing the party at the moment. Like, he has street cred. He has, you know, credibility on these issues. And so to me, he's got to be the front runner.
Since this campaign, John, is a continuation of what we did in 2016. You will recall, you may recall, that in 2016, many of the ideas that I talked about, Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, making public colleges and universities tuition free, all of those ideas, people say, oh, Bernie, they're so radical. They are extremely American people. Just won't accept those ideas. Well, you know what's happened in over 3 years? All of those ideas and many more are now part of the political mainstream.
So you're saying the party came your way?
Well, I don't want to say that. I think most people would say that.
All right. Thank you, Bernie, or Big Waz, Bernie supporter. Thanks, Waz. Next up is from the Discord. And once again, everybody, if you're listening now, you can access the Discord. You can talk to other Count the Dings fans. You can submit questions for Waz, Zach, and anybody else who's on there. This one comes from Dave S. Berland. He's wondering, what is effective in countering hate groups that are growing in confidence? Obviously, he's alluding to white nationalists, white supremacists, and a bunch of other hate groups that are growing in popularity and numbers over the last couple years, especially on social media and in public forums. In your opinion, what do you think is the best way to handle, you know, these growing numbers of people who obviously have hate in their heart?
Look, from where I sit in Los Angeles, California, like, what can I really do, right? Besides right. Get on a podcast that people who already think like me listen to and will listen to, you know, tweet the way I do, present myself in public the way I do. It's really not nothing I can personally do to assuage that kind of thing, to dim the glimmer of whatever the appeal of white nationalism, white supremacy is for a certain type of white person. To a certain extent, I don't know that there's anything you can do individually as a citizen, right? I think it's up to our elected officials. I think it's up to the people who wield influence to, like, one, you know, give people amazing and better alternatives, offer them alternatives. I think a lot of the arguments that I get into with Bernie people and people on the left is like their unwillingness to accept the idea. And me and Michael get into it about this all the time. It's like, I don't know that white Republican loving people, even people who are quote unquote economically, what are we calling them? Economically anxious people want to receive a message of economic equality from somebody who comes from a party that is perceived to be about black and brown people, right? And expressly so. I think we gotta find a way to thread that needle, right? As far as offering the better alternatives, I just don't think somebody like Bernie – I think somebody like Bernie might have credibility, but it's hard for somebody like Hillary Clinton specifically to have credibility with a certain type of small-C conservative white person who is just like, yo – you're filthy rich. You give speeches to Goldman Sachs. Now you want to sell me a bill of goods about economic equality and a minimum wage hike and it is this, that, and the third. When you about the party of black people, we know what your priorities are. It's about those people. It ain't about me. It's hard for those people to – it's hard for a certain type of person in the middle of the country to believe that a Democrat has credibility on these other issues. I say these other issues because there has to be alternatives, because it has to be either that, offer better alternatives, or people have to be very badly injured by the folks that they love, right? In other words, like if somebody is a white supremacist and they do love our current president, right? They granny got to lose a job and lose healthcare benefits and like lose their Medicare, lose their social, like their granny got to get hurt. Like they have to be personally injured by these people who are giving them the things that they think that they want right now. So those are the only two alternatives in my opinion, right? A lot of times we get into the argument about, well, there are racist people in the Democratic Party. And yeah, sure, there are white people who hate minorities who are in the Democratic Party. But you know what? They hate Republicans more because maybe their father lost their union job and therefore their house got foreclosed on, right? Like there's a reason why they vote Democrat, because it's like, yeah, I don't like black or brown people, but I know who I hate more. It's these money grubbing motherfuckers on the right. And so that's what I think. I think certain type of white person has to be personally injured by those folks to get out of that way of thinking.
Interesting question here from a new interactor of the show, S. Belg at S. Belg 1. They ask, what's the difference between, and we have to open up our race cap here a little bit, which I know Waz enjoys very much. They ask, what's the difference between a little bit of African in them and all Europeans are soft? Why is one understood as racist and the other is just a stereotype?
It's very easy to answer this in one simple question, because one group has never been subjugated by the other group for centuries. Right. Like, it's that simple. That's why it matters. That's why it matters. The Europeans have subjugated the African people for 400 or 500 years. That's why that shit matters. That's why it's a problem. That's why it needs to be stamped out. And by the way, it subsists to this day. And so when you try to do the reverse racism, just show me, show me the town. Show me the place in America where a white person will live under the rule of a black sheriff, a black mayor, a black governor, a black city. Like, where everybody who makes the influential decisions around you are black, right? That's why this shit matters. White people make decisions that severely affect the lives of black people. Black people don't do it in the reverse to white people. That's why what you're saying is asinine and stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Black people don't get to subjugate Europeans. At the end of the day, Dirk Nowitzki still gets to play in the NBA for 20 years and get paid well for it. Right? Because whatever, the NBA is a meritocracy and he gets to go out and do that. But when people make these stupid comparisons, it's like, no, dude, the African people have been exploited, subjugated, fucked over, for lack of a better term. I know I could have been more eloquent there, but like, by European people. So it's a problem when a white guy in a powerful position in a predominantly black sport uses, he's got a little bit of African in him as a pejorative. Like, it's just different from Shaq thinking that Vlade Divac is soft. The power dynamics there don't even compare. So, guys, come on, get better with these fucking questions, man. I would think somebody who's listening to Woke Bros would know why that's a stupid thing to say.
Next up from Matt Malapai, kind of keeping with the sports theme here, at Oosbuffer, he asks, would Cap signing with the Patriots hurt the cause at all? For those who don't know, Colin Kaepernick recently, I guess you could say, won his grievance or settled his grievance with the NFL. Him and Eric Reed were claiming that the NFL were blackballing the two players due to their national anthem protests. So as far as the cause, and today Nike just released a bunch of special edition Colin Kaepernick all black jerseys for sale. As far as the cause and such, what do you think about, you know, Cap, if he does sign with the Patriots? I mean, we've kind of touched on a little bit on Bomb, but didn't go full Waz tilt.
Look, man, I have a certain amount of, I just don't understand the concept that, and you know, the question wasn't framed in a way of like, oh, would it be selling out? It's like, is it detrimental to the cause for this guy to work again, particularly for that organization? And it's just like, no.
And also, I hate to interrupt too, and also we don't know if part of that agreement is that he agrees to not pursue an NFL career.
Sure. And the bottom line is, man, like, the thing about being an NFL quarterback is that it's a highly specialized job. Colin Kaepernick has put in so much hours, so much sacrifice, being the best player that he could be at this highly specialized profession. The idea that he wasn't able to participate in his chosen profession because he said that cops should stop whooping the asses of black people and killing them on the street for no reason is just like, he already paid an ultimate sacrifice. Like, at a certain point, how much sacrifices does this one dude have to make, right? Like, he missed out on his career for 2 years. He's been dragged through the mud. He's had death threats on his life, that of his family. Like, he's had horrible things said about him. You know, ultimately for me, which is a little bit of digression, this is an issue of labor, bro. This is a labor issue to me as Ted starts barking, because even he's mad about the Kaepernick. So I want to say backlash. People aren't killing him. People aren't like, oh, he took the money and ran. It's not that, but it's just people always feel suspicious when activist types get paid for stuff. And at the bottom, like, this was a labor dispute. Like, he got blackballed. He wasn't able to work for his money. This is for time lost. He got paid. This isn't some payoff, some hush money. No, like, I lost time off of my life, off of my, you know, my ability to work, dude. Like, that's what he got paid for. This isn't like some, I don't even understand how people are viewing this settlement money. The reason why they paid him a little bit extra, because they embarrassed themselves, right? And they knew that they would be made to be seen as people who came out and embarrassed themselves about this shit. So no, I don't think Colin Kaepernick working in the NFL again. The bottom line is, We're in a position where it's ridiculous to ask all NFL players to get out of the NFL because they're black. This is what they've worked their whole lives towards. How are you going to act? And by the way, the pressure's already on them. They're already paying mortgages for their mom and their aunt and their cousin and their grandmother. They're already paying for college for these people. They have people who depend on them. So this idea that a black man shouldn't work in the NFL because the power structure is so overtly racist is just not realistic. It's naive and ridiculous. And nobody would actually do this shit, right? Like, if there was an alternative, right? Let's just say NFL players could go out and start a new league that was all black owned and player owned. And that's not a realistic alternative. Maybe in the future we should, you know, as black people with capital, we should go out and try to achieve something like that. Sure. I don't know how feasible or realistic it is, but under the current paradigm, to ask these brothers, like, yo, quit your fucking job. The job that you've literally been working towards since you're like 10 years old. The only thing you've worked towards, by the way. Right? Like, this is the only thing they've worked towards. You should quit that. Stop supporting all of the people around you because Jerry Jones is a problematic figure. It's too late for that, bro. We're too far past that. So even for Colin, who's come out and, you know, basically showed you the racist and ridiculous ways of this organization/institution, the idea that he shouldn't working again. I just don't understand that. Even for the NFL, we're not there. There are no alternatives for somebody like Colin. He's way past the road. He's already dedicated his life. And, you know, we get it. Oh, well, he can go on a book tour. Oh, he can go on a speaking tour in college. Oh, he could. Bro, this man lived his life starting from a kid to do what it is that he's trying to do now. So, no, I don't think he'd be selling out by playing for the Patriots.
You and I both know this. You covered the league for 40 years. I played in it, and I covered today. If the NFL thought they could take this to court and win, Colin Kaepernick would not have been offered a settlement, because this is what happened. And normally, if you win from him, Skip, what do? They tie it up. Oh, they keep appealing. Just like when they beat Tom. Tom win. They keep, well, we're going to just keep going until we're going to tie it up, until you get tied up and says, okay, enough is enough. But no, they called it.
This one's kind of directed at the both of us here. Since the Owls are out and about, it's an anniversary for Drake recently. Matinee Q, he's curious about So Far Gone turning 10. Obviously, where does it rank among his best projects? You know, for you, I mean, you can take over after this. But I mean, for me, So Far Gone, I mean, I've probably talked about this before, but it's like a... Man, it's like that's such a good time for me in my life. You know what I mean? I was graduating high school, you know, about to turn 18. Like, that's prime. You know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah. Those Drake, you know, cruising with my boys and hanging out and listening to Drake and Lil Wayne and, you know, the peak of Lil Wayne mania at that time. You know what I mean? Like, just to be like, hey, this kid from Toronto is pretty damn dope. Let's, you know, do some projects together, do some work together, and kind of gave him a nice shine and put him out to the world, so to speak. So I think, you know, So Far Gone is super important. But I mean, dude, Take Care obviously is a classic. You know, More Life recently, I really love More Life, just the way that the dynamics, how it switched up, you know, from the first part to the second part. It was just great. I don't know. What do you think? What do you?
OVO Sound Radio.
Yo, it's so crazy because Drake is kind of the first, I want to say he's the first artist that I experienced as a phenomenon, even more so than 50.
Right.
Because growing up where I'm from, I knew who 50 Cent was already. Right.
And the thing is, too, I was just thinking about this a couple weeks ago, 2007, 50 Cent, when he released I Get Money. Right. And I'm sure you can attest to this. New York was a different place with that song.
Yeah.
You could not go anywhere in the city without hearing that song. Somebody's car, somebody's crib, somebody's, you know, stereo.
And people forget that he dropped two singles before that. And again, this is the first, this is the first album. This is kind of when 50 quote unquote fell off, which is a ridiculous thing to say, but whatever. This is when people consider that he fell off, is that the first two albums sold like basically like 20 million records combined, the first two, and this is the third one. And it, there was some delays. There was the him versus Kanye thing. He just put out a bunch of stuff, and then he finally put out I Get Money, and that just took off. You know, the Follow My Leads, the AO Technology, the Laughing Straight to the Bank with it. All of these things didn't really land, and then it was like it felt like I Get Money was a last ditch effort, and it went crazy. It went crazy, and it was you know, and it was basically 50's last stand, man. But yeah, that's what I'm saying about 50 is like even in 03, 02 or whatever, if it was a phenomenon, but like I had already, if he was already in my consciousness as an artist, right? Even my other favorite people, whether it be like Hov or Wayne or Ye or these guys, by the time they got to their zenith, I had already known about them for a while, right? Like they had already been in my consciousness. Drake was somebody, I knew nothing about this kid. Nothing about him, never heard of him. I just, you know, I remember Nyright posting him because I used to be on Nyright every day at that time. And I was like, okay, whatever, Canadian, whatever. Nyright always pushed stuff that I was like, okay, I get it. Y'all pushing stuff from all over the place and y'all trying to be as democratic and, you know, and I understand that if you're pushing something, part of the blog era was about like having integrity and the idea that they wouldn't push something that they didn't think was really good. But I ignored it. I completely ignored the whole thing because I'm still like that to a certain extent to this day. Like when I hear about a new rapper, I don't jump and listen to their new project. Well, I wait for what
we think is payola, though. You know what I mean?
Right. No, of course. But it's not even that. Like,
especially coming from the Hot 97 culture.
Because I don't listen to the radio no more. I think but for whatever reason, I trusted those institutions as a youngin. So if I listen to a new rapper, if you made it to the radio, it mean that you did something to get there. You know, being naive enough not to understand how the labels and radio are so in bed with each other. I'm just saying, like, by 2007, I was past radio stuff. It was all internet, right? And so a lot of the times these things would bubble up. Something like even Jay Electronica, who was like beyond myth and legend.
He was like a ghost.
Bro, the stories around him, like he was just – he felt like a mythical figure.
What was it? Like he's Jay-Z's homie. He's producing with Kanye. He's doing all this stuff.
Just Blaze is working with him. He doesn't have an album out. He's only got these few songs out, but he's this, he's that. He's from New Orleans, but he's got these East Coast roots and this. Like there was all of this myth around him. But I'm just saying like even something like Jay Electronica, I would just ignore. Until your shit bubbled up to the surface, like past a certain point, like you get to a notoriety level where it's like everybody has to know what you're doing, then I'll give you an evaluation of whether I like you or I don't. But usually I just ignore quote unquote up and coming shit. And Drake was no different. I ignored the entire thing. And I just remember I was at my man a day's house because that, you know, at that time, like, man, me and my homies spending so much time together. Like I'd literally just get back from work or some shit and go to his house and just talk music, watch TV, watch sports, whatever. I'm in his room. I'll never forget. He's cleaning his room up and he's playing music and the Say What's Real comes on. And, you know, I had known the song from 808 to Heartbreak already, which was an album that I fucking hated. That's and to this day, I still don't like 808s. I still have so many issues with 808s. I get it, guys. The birth modern music, blah, blah, blah. Kid Cudi invented Drake. Yeah, but I heard it all. I get it. I just personally, as a Kanye lover, somebody who to this day, I still have love for Kanye, despite all of the bullshit. I just was like, this is whack. So I had already heard Say What's Real. I thought it was a cool song, but I didn't have the exact same sentiments as like everybody else did. I guess so many people were obsessed with 808s just as a album, as a concept, as a piece of work, whatever. I didn't have that attachment to Say What's Real. Drake made me like Say What's Real. Real talk. I'm sitting in my friend's room and I'm like, yo, whoever this kid is, he's going off. He's like, it's Drake. And he's like, I've been trying to tell you to listen to him. I was like, nah, I know, but whatever. So then, you know, I get to listening to this kid. The album drops and it's just like, you know, that shit was just like a bomb. So long story short, I just think So Far Gone is obviously it's the most important piece of work because it's what broke him out to the mainstream. And these records went number one, you know, best I ever. And that's the thing, like he's still dropping. That's why I say it's the most important. It set the standard for his career and he's still at that standard, meaning he's still dropping number ones. Best I Ever Had was number one.
Dude, Best I Ever Had was not only a number one, like you could not turn on any radio, MTV, VH, whatever at the time and not
Successful
hear that song.
Successful was a number one.
That one too.
You know what I'm saying? And then, of course, he goes from doing that. He start doing the Money to Blow with Birdman, Bedrock, like the Young Money compilation stuff. All it, like it's the most important thing he put out because it set the standard. Like this mixtape put out number one records, and people thought it was an artistic work. So he set the standard for who he is. This is not Flo Rida dropping Low. Right. And that being the standard. And by the way, that has been the standard. Right. It's like I drop these one offs that live on Billboard, that live at Z100's Jingle Ball, or, you know, that's where these
records good for the year.
Live. And yeah, whatever. You know, like, God bless him. He's feeding his family. He's doing his thing. Like, I don't have – I'm not going to begrudge him for that, but it set the standard. But so far, go ahead and set the standard of we're putting out number ones and we're putting out stuff with artistic integrity and merit. And so, you know, to me, it's the most important thing he's ever done. And to this day, we're, you know, we're 10 years later and he literally has dropped the biggest thing of his life 10 years after his career started. Right? Like, he's at his biggest point, right? Like, he's never been bigger than what he is right now. You know, we can't say that for Jay-Z or 50, as we mentioned before, like, whose people whose stuff has ebbed and flowed. And Hov is like, you know, he's kind of an ombudsman at this point, you know, like, he's not, he is a mainstream artist, but he's not in that
lane. Legacy award at this point, really.
Right. He's a legacy act. He's not Chance. He's not Drake. He's not Cole. He's not Kendrick. You understand what I'm saying? Just to name a few of the biggest artists that we got. And so, you know, So Far Gone, it's not something that I listen to as much of his other work. But when I do, I'm instantly transported to what I was doing, you know, what it was like to discover this kid. Because, again, I wasn't fucking – I never listened to Comeback Season before this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I never listened to I never heard a Replacement Girl. That was a thing that never happened in my world. Like, I never knew all of this stuff. And I know there's a group of people who were very familiar and intimate with his work before So Far Gone. I wasn't one of those people. My introduction to Drake was So Far Gone and Say What's Real specifically. And so, you know, and people who listen to this know how I feel about Drake. Like, he's my favorite artist out right now. To me, he makes the most music that I listen to the most. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm still listening to Blue Tint damn near every day at the gym. You know? And My Feelings came on at a party that I was at yesterday. And I was like, this song is a bop. I'm sorry.
It is.
You know, like, that's the thing. Like, he makes the most music that I listen to with the most repetition. You know,
so
that's my So Far Gone piece.
From a Drake fan standpoint, because I've always found this to be a little interesting. Looking at Drake and his body of work. Do you prefer Drake when he's solo Drake or Drake with Trey Songz, Drake with Lil Wayne, Drake with Rihanna, Nicki, whoever? You know what I mean? Because there's two different types of Drakes. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, if he's doing a full song, just Drake, he's going in telling that full story of X, Y, and Z. Or this
okay,
dude trying to press
my favorite Drake is definitely – okay, my favorite Drake is, you know, an example of this. Okay, if I have to pick one, an example of this would be like Wu-Tang Forever, right?
Right.
Where he spits to my mind one of the best verses of his life. And he still got that, I just love when I'm with you, man, this shit is on 10. He's still doing that. He's doing everything, in my opinion. He's not quite doing Passion Fruit, but he's doing a good enough approximation of that where he is literally walking the tightrope on that song.
Well, it's like he's Drake featuring Drake, like he says. You know what I mean?
You know, and to me, that's when he's at his most unstoppable. It's the seamless transition, the way he's able to manipulate his voice to do this one thing and be in the pocket in an incredible way and still do the, you know, the melodies and the harmonies and all of this other shit, right? My second favorite Drake, honestly, is like shit that he did with Lil Baby or shit that he did on Versace when he's aping other artists in their style and, like, especially the rap stuff. You know what I'm saying? Shit that he does with 21. Those are my favorite things. When, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's my favorite thing to watch. Even though on something like Buried Alive, which I'm not into, you know what I'm saying? That's not my thing, and that's not a Kendrick shot. Like, I don't really understand that song, but I get what he's trying to do. He's like, yo, this kid is next, right? To the point where, and I tell people this shit all the time, hell yeah, fucking right. That's him just completely aping Kendrick's style. He's just biting Kendrick. 150 million%, he's just biting him.
But the thing, like, is with that stuff too, is like Drake likes to match what that person is putting out in the studio because he loves to be in the studio making these songs as opposed to, hey, I'm in London, let me just send you a track.
But
he
again,
he likes to be there.
Look
and,
alive.
And that, you know, when you work with somebody like that, if you're working with Lil Baby for 2-3 days, I mean, obviously you're going to get, you know, some of his flow and you want to match his energy.
something like Look Alive, something like, and you know, I personally, because I'm somebody who's a fan of dancehall music my whole life, I loved what he was doing with PopCon. I love what he has done with the Afrobeat cats. Like, I love that. I haven't been crazy about the UK stuff, but I understand why people enjoy it. I love when he does the rap stuff. That I still to me, it's like when he's doing his Drake, I'm rapping my ass off, and he's combining it with the singing or harmonizing or whatever you want to call it. When he's just straight up like going on a young, hungry cat, like a 21, like a baby, you know, like a block boy, like a Migos, you know what I'm saying? Cause I'm sorry, that Versace moment is something I'll never forget. Like, I'm going to parties and people and that verse is not like an easy verse to remember or recite. People reciting that Versace verse word for word because he's just snapped on it. I love when he's doing that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And to anybody out there who, you know, is on the fence about Drake and you haven't heard his old stuff or even his Lucy's, I mean, like, you know, 9 a.m. in Dallas, 5 a.m. in 5 a.m. Toronto, 4 a.m. in
Timestamp shape Drake, yeah. as it's been dubbed.
That's a nice, you know, Ransom, old Drake, Lil Wayne mixtape stuff. That's all. I mean, bro, I just played Ransom like this weekend and I was still like A, B, C, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like doing the whole thing because that's like, that stuff is great. And that's Lil Wayne too at his peak. Like, that's good Lil Wayne.
I've heard the biggest criticism I've ever, you know, the main criticism of Drake is like, oh, he's aping other people's stuff all the time. And oh, his shit doesn't age well. I honestly think that, like, the ape and stuff, whatever, you can say that about him, you can say it about Ye, you can say it about Hove, and you can say what it means for people, for artists to do that type of stuff, as opposed to somebody like J. Cole, who's literally gone 3 albums without a feature. You know what I'm saying? We can talk about the differences between that and the merits and, you know, what it means to be a rap artist and do it or not do it. Like, that's cool. I think when people say that his music doesn't age well, I just think it's patently false and unfair. Nah,
that's so untrue. So untrue because sure, there's some stuff that, like, maybe it's not the same sound, but honestly, go listen to Ransom. Go listen to Ransom. Like, that was made in like 07, 08.
The shit with Lil Wayne and Bun B on the first album, or even something like Fancy on the first album.
Or that's even Unstoppable. Unstoppable with Santa Gold.
Unstoppable with Santa Gold is crazy. November 18th is crazy. Like, these songs are still, if you want to bop to them, you can. And the problem with Drake is that he's never stopped putting out hits. There's no reason to look back, right? Say somebody like me who loves 50. Of course, in 2019, I have incentive to go back and listen to 50 Cent is the Future and listen to Get Rich and listen to The Massacre because he's no longer killing me with stuff that impacts me that way anymore, right? Like, I don't feel like how I feel the first time I heard Get Rich when 50 drops a new project. So I have incentive to go back to those feelings. With Drake, you don't have that. He's still dropping shit that smacks you the same way Best I Ever Had did. Like, in my feelings, it's just Best I Ever Had updated 10 years from now.
Basically, yeah. It's just the dance craze stuff now, yeah.
Like, who? Like, it's like, you can't do, like, I can't do it with Hove. Because it's like, when Volume 3 dropped, like, he was just in a different space. His music, I received his music in such a different way. So it's like, when I listen to Volume 3, I'm literally transported to that time where Hove was the only thing that mattered in the whole world to me as far as rap goes, you know? So I'm incentivized to do that. So of course I'm like, oh, this music has aged so beautifully because I fell in love with it at a certain time. And that person is no longer making songs that people, you know, are impacted that way by. Not to say that Hove is putting out trash. Like, obviously we all love 444. But even if you want to say 444 is a better album than Volume 3 or Volume 2 or, you know, The Blueprint. Like, you're no longer receiving Hove's music that way.
And it's Hove in a different space in 444. It's
Hove. Everything
I'm
is
old. I got a family, my kids, you know what I mean? It's different than, like, you know, I'm selling crack.
But trust me, if Hove was able to maintain the level of interest, the level of impact and cutting through for the 10 years after Blueprint, you know, people will be talking about Blueprint a lot differently. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's just hard.
For sure.
You know, that was just a seminal moment. I just think Drake he just hasn't stopped. And so it's, you know, for people to levy that, oh, he doesn't make shit that lasts, his bubble gum, I just think that's unfair and just false.
Another toast.
Amazon.
Another toast. Come on.
Last session.
What's the name of the album?
So far gone.
What time is it right now, right? Today it is
11:25, Tuesday, February 10th. 2000, you know it's real shit, we so far gone. This is 2009, and my nigga Drake just finished his third mixtape. Drake, tell the people what you gotta tell them about them this tape. Tell them a little bit about this mixtape. Tell them what they gonna be getting out of this one. Tell them.
Man, look, all I can say is, it's a body of work, man. It's a body of work to listen to and appreciate and get lost in, you know, so... I just hope you enjoy it. That's all I can say, man. You know, so far gone. Took me a long time. So, shit, enjoy it.
One more big one, and then we'll hit a couple quick hitters to get out of here. This one's from Matinee Q again. Another good question. He wants to know your thoughts on Amazon bailing on Long Island City and De Blasio whining about it.
I'm happy because I'm proud of New York City for standing up to these cats and people on the ground straight up stepping up. Because they wanted to do this. City Hall wanted to do this. They just wanted the prestige. Because Honestly, as a politician, you incentivized by this type of shit. Like, I'm the one who brought Amazon here, right? Like,
that goes on your record.
Yeah,
that goes
on I'm the one who brought the West Side Stadium here, right? Which ended up not happening. You know, the Jets messed that up. But whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, politicians are – they wanted that in City Hall. And the people on the ground got this shit to stop. And guess what, man? We're not Wisconsin. And those of you who listen to Woke Bros Enough, go out and Google Foxconn and Google how they got that deal together. And Google the bullying that they did, the lying that they did to get that deal done. All because they can go to this small town in Wisconsin and, you know, show them some shiny shit and get them to be on board. And those little city government officials in those little towns, you know how easily bought off those dudes are? You know, easily bought and paid for those dudes are. We're not even going to get into Scott Walker and the disgusting, crooked, crook, you know, scumbag that he is. But they was able to walk into that little town and bully those folks and sell them a dream. But they came to New York and New York told them to kick rocks. And I'm fucking proud of them for it. Because the bottom line is, even when they talk about, oh, we bring in 20,000, not really.
That's the biggest thing is like people don't understand that you're bringing the job, sure, but you know who's going to apply for those jobs?
Already have those jobs to New York.
That and people in Ohio or Pennsylvania or Jersey are going to be like, hey, let me apply for this job and then let me move into a city that already has too many people.
It's not going to be a bunch of people from Flushing. And I'm not even talking about people shouldn't be moving to New York over crack, because I even think that's a little bit overblown, especially when you see somewhere. In a place
sure,
like,
but it's not jobs for New York.
It's
people,
not.
You know what I mean?
Especially some in a place like Long Island City, where shit, man, it'd be nice if all of the industrial shit wasn't just, you know, that they're up, they're tearing down the industrial stuff. Because in Queens, there's a shit ton of that industrial shit, right? And like getting rid of, now they just house strip clubs there. But I'm just saying, like, getting these places, it's industrial places. Like, we don't live in an industrial society anymore. Those things are empty. People aren't using them for the most part. And if they made those places in places like Long Island City, you know, where it's more residential, or not residential, but like, you know, you erect buildings where actual people live at, and it's because they were getting an actual living wage from Amazon. But you know that's not what the case is going to be. That neighborhood is going to come up, but that's because people who already make a shit ton of money with Amazon are now going to be moved to New York. And Amazon knows to attract the type of employee that they want to have going forward. They can't just be in Seattle. They can't just be up there. They got to be in places like New York because it makes their jobs more attractive and competitive. And we get that. But they're not giving it to the rank and file New Yorkers. That's not the case. So I'm glad people stepped up and was like, dog, you want subsidies just so you can have the right, so we can have the privilege of saying Amazon is here? New York fucking city? Are you fucking crazy?
We from New York. ISIS, if you come to New York City and you try to blow anything up, Barack Obama is coming for you. I'm from Brooklyn. I read Brooklyn all day. They killed Biggie.
What part of Brooklyn are you from?
I'm from Brownsville.
You're from Brownsville. You are very Brooklyn.
So fucking Brooklyn. They killed my boy Biggie. They fucking killed Biggie because he was a legend.
I'm sorry, Rob. I get emotional about this type of shit.
Nah, I mean, look,
like,
dude,
are you crazy? New York needs to be associated with you, bro? How?
For sure. It wasn't a good
Saint Wisconsin, boy. No disrespect to the Wisconsin people who listen to this show. But like I said, go look up what those Foxconn people did. Go look, bought and paid for those bitch-ass city officials, yo. Seriously. Promising all kinds of jobs. And it's bullshit. They just bullshit them because they knew they could do it.
And that leads us to one of our final quick hitters of the show. This one comes from Ben, or I'm sorry, this one comes from Brian Leachy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Brian, I know you're a fan of the show, fan of the Count the Dings Network all the way out in Sydney. He asks, as do you have any article book recommendations? Obviously, the topic you were just discussing could be something they look into, but anything that's been kind of...
Honestly, dude, and I say this all the time when y'all ask me about this stuff. I've been trash with books this year. But as far as who you should be like listening to, I think what Chris Hayes is doing on his Why Is This Happening podcast is incredible. Like the people whose voices he allows on that show. Everybody who listens to this should be listening to Chris Hayes' podcast, Why Is This Happening? Like, he does deep dive into shit that we care about. And with a worldview that is very in line with that of the people on Woke Bros. So I think you should be listening to that, and I think you should be listening to Mehdi Hassan's podcast, Deconstructed. It's on the Intercept, Glenn Greenwald, who we don't really fuck with. That's his outfit. Actually, that's Mike's man's. I don't really bang with son because he's Laura Ingraham's best friend these days. But Mehdi Hassan, bro, Deconstructed on the Intercept. Those two podcasts you should be absolutely listening to. I love what they're doing.
One more question here from Ben Gordon. And not that Ben Gordon at Praise the Gourd.
Mount Vernon.
They just simply asked, any Haitian spots in Queens you recommend for some grub?
Oh, I'm still big Good Taste. I'm still a big Good Taste enthusiast. Like, that's over there on Linden Boulevard. It's in Cambria Heights right before. It's on the Queens and Long Island border. I'm still big Good Taste. There's a couple of Free Thai spots on Jamaica Ave, like I want to say like Jamaica and 216 over in the Queens Village neighborhood, my old stomping grounds. So I forget the name of this spot, man, but I'm still a Big Taste spot because it's like, you know, it's in and out, right? Like they pioneered that shit for a Haitian restaurant specifically in Queens. Like you go in on the cafeteria line and if you want tasso, you want grill, you want fried fish, you want chicken, you want whatever, you know, their rice is always popping. They do a mac and cheese for you. It's reasonably priced. I remember when them shits was $6.50 a fucking box. I'm sure it's like 11 or 12 now, but it's still reasonably priced. Good quality food, a nice amount. Shout out to my people at Good Taste, bro.
And the last question to close us off here, at Ike Torres asks from Discord. And once again, everybody can access Discord on patreon.com/countthedings. He just wants to know a simple question. When the hell is Waz coming back to the Discord chat?
Yo, man, you know what happened, dog, is like I actually – and this is going to sound like an excuse, but it's not. It's like I actually got a new phone. That if anybody noticed, when did I get this phone? I think I got this phone in June. So that's when I stopped doing the Discord. I didn't have it on my new phone. I also ended up losing my laptop. My laptop got stolen and my man's car got broken into in New York and my laptop got stolen. So I didn't have it automatically synced with my new laptop. And I was just too lazy to figure out, yo, Jade, how do I get into Discord and download it on my phone and do all this other shit and make sure I'm one of the admins and all of that? I was just lazy. But I will. Okay. I promise you guys,
they want to know.
Rob, you know what? You can remind me. By the time I'm talking into this mic on the next Woke Bros, I will be back in the Discord chat. Huh.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Big Waz with the guarantee of the week.
And just hit my line on Twitter to make sure you're reminding me and stuff like that. Instagram, if you follow me at Big Waz on all social media platforms, just hit my line and be like, yo, what's up? I will get back in the Discord. I will say what up to our people. I just want to say that to everybody who listens to this show, listens to all the shows throughout the network, man, I'm really, really super appreciative of all the support we get from you guys. Last year around this time, we got some of the most terrible news that a company can get. And it's not just because, you know, we're a company and we're trying to get something dope done together. We're all really close and we're all really friends. And, you know, all this terrible thing that happened to all of us. So it's like if it was just me and be whatever, but it's happening with all my brothers too. And so we were going through a difficult time last year, and we're on the precipice of announcing some really cool shit that we're going to be doing going forward. And I just want to thank everybody who has supported us throughout this entire, you know, transitional period, man. It got so ugly. We might have had to fold up and go our separate ways and do something else. But, you know, our patrons, the people who supported our sponsors, the people who straight up like hit Jade up all the time to tell him what a great job that he's doing. Hit me up, hit Trey, hit Zach, hit Amin. It kept guys going and wanting to do stuff. You know, just the idea that people fucked with us a lot and I don't want to say depend on our content, but really love what we do. You know, and that shit matters, you know, not just the financial stuff, the monetary stuff, what it does spiritually for somebody to know that you got such a, you know, a decent amount of people. Like, we don't have the hugest crowd, but we got a decent amount of people who love what we do, man, and aren't afraid to express to us, you know, how much they appreciate what we're doing as a group. And you know, these new things that we'll be rolling out pretty soon and announcing, man, I swear to God, it's only but for the people that support us, you know, even after the crash, so to speak. So I want to send a big thank you to everybody who loves this show. I appreciate y'all getting at us, giving us your comments, your feedbacks, your critiques, you know, shit talking me on Twitter. I love all of that, man. I appreciate what y'all do, man. So I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everybody for that. Outside of that, man, of course, you know, make sure you get your tickets to the live show in Boston if you're in the Northeast, or if you want to fly from Australia or England or, you know, South Africa, where we got some of our fans.
Hey,
at.
I was actually looking at some stuff, and one-way trip flight from Boston to New York, currently $20 on JetBlue right now if you buy this week.
Okay. So there you go.
$20 for the flight back.
$20 to get your ass right to Boston from New York, man. So please, we only got a few tickets left, man. I would love to see us sell out, see a bunch of Count the Dink supporters, man. As well as the Sloan Dorks. I got no problem with them either. But you know, that would be just fantastic for everybody to come out and support and have a good time. And of course, make sure you get your tickets to the TMBS live show in LA. I will be in the building, in the flesh, in all of my splendor, so to speak, man. I'ma really be going in. I'ma act the ass in LA, man, because you know the TMBS crowd is a slightly different crowd from the Count the Dings one. So I look forward to that in a major way. Of course, Anna Kasparian and Vila pulling up too. So make sure you guys get tickets to that. Those of you on the left coast, man. Do we have anything else, Rob?
Nope, I think that's it. Once again, make sure everybody, if you're not already a Patreon, go ahead, patreon.com/countthedings. We have special Discord rewards, different access to early tickets for future live show events, which we do have, you know, reportedly some coming up in the works, maybe out west around some NBA playoff stuff, but you never know. Outside of that, I think that's it, Waz.
All right, y'all. See y'all in a week. I'm out. One.